Welcome back into the program. It's a Monday edition of Sports Call here on your radio dial, Tiger 95.9 FM and AM 620 WTRP in LaGrange. JJ, Tom, and Brooks inside our studios. Hope that everybody had a great weekend, enjoyed some playoff football yesterday, and we want to take this opportunity to go back to our Auburn Bank phone line and bring on a good friend of the program, the radio voice of the Atlanta Falcons, Wes Durham, kind enough to join us on today's program. Wes, how are things going in your world?
I'm okay, JJ. Hope you guys are well. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. Let's just jump right into it. We want to talk a lot about the Atlanta Falcons as they've got a new head coach in Arthur Smith and a new general manager in Terry Fontenot. Let's talk about the head coach, Wes. What was your initial reaction to the news that Arthur Smith would be the next head coach for Atlanta?
I think he was certainly a guy that, you know, I had on a list. If I had an actual list in front of me, he would have been on it. I think he hits a lot of the checkpoints that Atlanta was looking for. I think he's a guy who's got an incredibly interesting football journey, not from only his days as a player, but certainly what he's done with coaches and the several staffs he's been a part of, most notably in Tennessee. And I think there's a lot to be gleaned from that as he starts his first time as a head coach of his own. I think that Arthur came in with obviously a tremendous offensive background, but he's done enough work on defense, I think, to create the checks and balances. And then I think the next thing that I always consider when something like this goes down is what kind of staff is he capable of putting together? And I think he's shown you that. I think Dean Pease coming in as the defensive coordinator, Dave Ragone on the offensive side, Marquise Williams is the special teams guy. He's showing you a variance from a lot of different places. And now his position coaches, you know, whether it's Charles London who's going to handle quarterbacks or you know, when you look at Dwayne Ledford, who's coming in to coach the offensive line from the University of Louisville, I think he's showing you a lot of variances, and that's a good thing. The other thing that he said that I think should resonate with a lot of people that are Falcon fans is he doesn't want a bunch of guys around him that are always going to agree with him. And I think that has probably served him well, and I think that speaks to the background he comes from and his family who's been so incredibly successful in business.
Yep. Well, Wes, with the folks that you talked to regarding the Falcons, I mean, what has been the thought like? Have they been excited about it? Have there been some that are kind of wondering if this is the right hire? But, I mean, just kind of general consensus on the thoughts around the fan base and the people that you talked to.
Well, people I've talked to seem to think it's a really good fit because it's a guy who's got an offensive background. And for all the good things that Atlanta has done defensively as it relates to the draft and age and, you know, from a salary perspective where they are, they've got to get better on the offensive side. And people say, well, with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, how much better do you need to be? And my answer to that would be, well, we got to run the ball for the first time in 3 years at some point. And I think that's what Arthur specialized in. Everybody talks about the relationship with Ryan Tannehill and all the good things he did with Tannehill, which are true. But he also, in Tennessee, showed you a variety of formations and a variety of packages and from a personnel perspective that I think can make him successful in Atlanta as well. Plus, I think he's also, and this goes back to Terry Fontenot coming in from New Orleans after 18 years with that organization, I think he's got an opportunity to be successful in that area as well, in putting the 53 together and building the 48 you're ultimately going to have active on game day.
And talking about putting that roster together, Wes, that's exactly what a general manager does in most front offices. And Atlanta's got to change there as well. Terry Fontenot is that guy. Educate our listeners a little bit about who he is.
Well, he spent the last 18 years. In fact, the only organization he's really worked for is the New Orleans Saints. It's a fascinating story. He was a captain at Tulane, played in the defensive secondary, started out as a marketing intern with the Saints. And you know, I equate it to George Bodenheimer, who started out as working in the mailroom at ESPN and picking up Dick Vitale at the Hartford Airport and ultimately became the president of the company. I think that's what Terry did. Terry became the assistant general manager for player personnel behind Mickey Loomis, and I think he learned a ton from Mickey. I think he learned a ton from Jeff Ireland, who's been there the last 3 years. And he's coming to Atlanta with a take the best player in terms of fit in the draft philosophy, but also I'm going to build for 21, but I'm not sacrificing 22 and 23 or in the reverse. I'm not going to sacrifice 21 for 22 and 23. And I think he understands the challenges Atlanta faces because he's been there. everybody says, why do you take a guy from New Orleans? Well, a guy from New Orleans knows how to deal with a salary cap because, guys, 4 years ago, New Orleans started the season $27 million over next year's salary cap. So they know how to do the math in New Orleans. And I jokingly told somebody in the Falcon organization, if Terry brings that abacus they use in New Orleans, I'm going to like him a whole lot more than I'm just going to like him being named, because he figures out the math and the money on this deal for Atlanta, then he'll have done a hell of a job before we ever play the first game, because the Falcons have got some, they've got some issues, and everybody points to Julio and Matt, and yeah, there's a lot tied up to that, but you got to start thinking about how you want to handle, you know, the future here with guys like Keanu Neal. I mean, that to me is one of the most important pieces you've got to figure out. DeMonte KZ, Ricardo Allen, guys on that young defense who are playmakers in their own right.
Well, Wes, you talk about the future, and I guess there's always this thought process there in the NFL when a new regime comes in this case, new head coach and new GM, you've got a quarterback that has been there for many, many years. He's 35 years old.
Right.
You got to think his time is getting close. Do the Falcons make a move like that? Do they look towards the future and try to draft in that area and maybe move Matt Ryan on, or is Matt Ryan their guy to get them towards the future?
All right, there's two important things to remember about when you discuss Matt Ryan. Number one, his contract, if you cut him loose or if you were to waive him, that's $71.5 million of dead money.
Right.
So moving on from Matt Ryan is not a smart investment in 21, 22, or 23, because it will handcuff you for 3 or 4 years, right?
Right.
Julio Jones, by the way, is about $38, $39 million of dead money. So for all the people that have the idea of playing the pocket, capologist, which is always my favorite thing, it's like people that tell me they're 81 teams in the NCAA tournament for 68 spots. I used to love when Digger Phelps was on ESPN, because I would count all the teams he said were in the tournament, and I'd look down, there'd be 92 teams for 68 slots. So anybody that tells me, you know, well, you got to move Matt Ryan. Well, you might be able to trade, but still you got to sort out, and this is what I mean. The smartest guy on every team, the most important guy on every team this type of year, is the guy who figures out the cap, right?
Right.
So Matt Ryan, yeah, 35. Do you need to move on? I don't know that you need to move on, because, I mean, we're seeing a 43-year-old guy go to the Super Bowl, right?
Right.
So, and Matt has no qualms. He'd like to play till he's 40, and I think the way he takes care of his body, he does. The most important thing for me right now, and this is just the guy that's done the games, this is not anybody living inside that building, I think they've got to find a way to run the ball to make it easier for Matt and Julio and Russell Gage and Calvin Ridley and Hayden Hurst to catch the ball. So that's a twofold question. One, is Todd Gurley going to come back at an affordable price? I don't know that. Is he going to come back and shape where you can lean on him at that affordable price? Or do you start to look at how the offensive line is going to be structured? That's maybe where I would start. And here's the other piece you've got. You got the fourth pick in the draft. And everybody says, well, you know, you mentioned quarterback. Well, if you think that one of those quarterbacks behind the one that we know is the generational talent, the one that's going number one, and I don't say can't miss, but he's pretty good now. I mean, he's not going to have many bad days, I don't think, unless somebody screws him up in the NFL. But these other guys, you got to do a little more work with. And here's the other piece: we're not going to have the run up to the draft, guys, this year that we've had in years past.
Right.
I mean, you're not going to be able to bring those guys in and put them on the whiteboard in your facility and see how good they handle, you know, talking about the plays, things like that. You're not going to be able to conduct the private workouts in Florida, you know, that kind of thing. So be mindful of that as you talk about the draft, because a lot of things could change. Is this the year Atlanta trades down with the fourth pick to get something else in one in addition to the one they trade with? Do you convert some of that inventory, if you will, to maybe what you have in 22 and 23? I think all that has to be under consideration, to be honest.
Wes, what about on the defensive side of the ball? We spent a lot of time talking about the offense, and rightfully so. It's an offense that has frustrated a lot of Falcons fans over the past few years. Here in Auburn, a little disappointed that Marlon Davidson was only able to be active for half of the games this year,
right,
for Atlanta, being the second-round pick that he was. How does the defense take that next step for Atlanta?
It's a really good question, and I think it's one that Atlanta has to answer with kind of what they're going to do with some of those young guys like Marlon Davidson. Obviously, the knee issue held him back, J.J., quite a bit. And then about the time you thought he was getting comfortable is when the COVID tapped in. And he went on the COVID list. And, you know, whether it was a positive test or contact tracing, I don't know. They didn't tell you that kind of thing this year. But to me, he's part of the future because Tyler Davison's had a really good year. Jacob Tuioti Mariner's probably a guy you can re-sign. Tyler Davidson may want a little more money. And because you're trying to keep Keanu Neal, Ricardo Allen, DeMonte KZ in that secondary, you know, Marlon Davidson may be somebody you lean on sooner than later because his price tag is right. And so I think, yeah, they're definitely going to count on him, and I think he's going to be a big part of what Dean Pease wants to do defensively because I think he's got a future plan in whether they're going to be a four-man front or a three-man front.
Yeah.
He seemed to be able to give them a little bit of both, and I think that's something that that when you look at it will certainly pay off for Atlanta down the road.
You're listening to Wes Durham, the radio voice of the Atlanta Falcons. You can listen to all Falcons games right here on Tiger 95.9 FM in the Auburn and Opelika area. Wes, as we talk about this Atlanta Falcons football team and also look at the big picture NFL, we know who the Super Bowl is now going to be this year. I'm just curious. People are going to be upset that I'm bringing this back up, but I got to go back to the Super Bowl that you called just a few years back with the Falcons and Patriots, Wes. When did you know Atlanta was in trouble looking back on that game?
When they didn't do anything with the onside kick.
Yeah. Forgot about that.
I mean, long before the Dante Hightower
knocked
down.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, when they didn't do anything with the onside kick from New England, then I thought, uh-oh, hope this one doesn't come back to bite them. The Hightower fumble and recovery and score by New England, that's an easy one.
Uh-huh.
But when they didn't, when they got the onside, remember, they scored to open the third quarter. And then when New England went down and scored and Atlanta recovered an onside kick and didn't do anything with it, then I thought, wait a second here. You don't want to give these cats any more momentum than they already have built into their DNA. So, yeah, that was it for me. And then the Julian Edelman catch off his own shoe tops or something like that, whatever the world that was, you know, that's the most bizarre. That's when you knew that the football gods might not be with you, if you knew what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, because Julian Edelman doesn't make that catch. They've got to make a decision. They have to make a financial decision on where they're going to have to win the game by going for fourth and long in their own end of the field. And that probably would have sealed it. Anytime, and, you know, I've had every blog sent to me. I've had, you know, I've run into people at golf courses that got their own theory they've scratched out on the back of a scorecard or notebook paper or cocktail napkin or whatever. About 11 or 12 different things had to happen for Atlanta not to win that game, and all 12 or 11 of them happened. I mean, I've had a guy hand me a sheet that said, here are the 8 things that cost Atlanta the Super Bowl. And, you know, okay, thanks. I called it. I got you. But no, it is a disappointing night. But I'd say this to, you know, whatever happens, you know, when Auburn, and you guys follow Auburn closely and the rest of the SEC, when you see teams lose in certain ways, like Green Bay's getting ready to go through it, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, Green Bay had that joker going to the fourth quarter. Tom Brady threw them 3 second-half interceptions, right? And they didn't win the game. And everybody's talking about the kick on fourth down. Lord, you can go back and find 5 or 6 things yesterday afternoon, long before we ever got to whether Matt LaFleur kicked a field goal or went for it on fourth down.
Yeah, all the drop passes that the Packers had.
That would be one.
That's
a good place to start.
Yeah. Well, Wes, you mentioned Tom Brady. I've never seen Tom Brady play in person. And you always hear TV doesn't do it justice. You have been privileged enough to be able to see Brady in person. Is that true? I mean, when you watch him in person, is he just different?
Yes. I've seen Tom Brady now 9 times. I've done a broadcast. Tom Brady's played in 9 different times.
Right.
And Atlanta has yet to beat Tom Brady in any of those games. And some of them were preseason games. But nonetheless, I've actually had a chance to watch him practice, stand on the sideline and watch him practice before Atlanta played him in a preseason game. In 2006, I was able to watch Tom Brady practice at Flowery Branch. And Bill O'Brien, who's now, I guess, going to be on staff at Alabama, he was a former GA at Georgia Tech when I first started doing the games there. So I was able to kind of stand on the field and watch him practice. And watching him practice was awesome. He's as good as it gets, guys. I mean, and it's not just the physical way he takes care of his body and the avocado ice cream and all the jazz you hear about. What he does mentally to get ready and the way he takes care of his body in terms of his practice habits. Look, Tony Gonzalez was in Atlanta at the end of his career. And I'm sorry, JJ, if I'm going long here, but Tony Gonzalez used to catch 100 passes before practice off the gun and then catch 100 after practice. Wow. Go over and kind of hit the tight ends doing the blocking game, right? Work on just kind of the rep of blocking, if you will, for a tight end. And I told somebody, you watch Tony Gonzalez practice, and when he came to Atlanta, you knew he was going to the Hall of Fame, right? He just then enhanced his Hall of Fame status to make himself first ballot. Well, and I jokingly tell people this, but it's kind of true. When you saw Tony Gonzalez practice, you wanted to do your job better because you saw how hard he worked at it, right?
Yeah.
And you feel like, well, if that guy's going to the Hall of Fame, the least you can do as the radio announcer or the guy carrying the water or the guy running out the playbook or hitting the horn at practice to signal the end of the period, then, the way Tony Gonzalez does it, then the least you can do is at least do it that good, right? Try and be good at your job. And Tom Brady, I can imagine, has that kind of impact on Tampa, too. And the way they've played this year, his leadership just by his presence, I'm sure, has a lot to do with their success if you talk to their team.
Okay. We're talking to the voice of the Atlanta Falcons, Wes Durham. Wes, you obviously deal with the Falcons. You've also had a lot of time with Georgia Tech. You know Atlanta sports, and unfortunately, the sports world lost Hank Aaron recently.
Yep.
How important was Hank Aaron to the city of Atlanta? What did he mean to that city?
Oh, I think what Hank Aaron's impact in this city is far more significant off the field as on the field.
Right.
I mean, when you think about it, he stopped playing in 1976 and lived to 2021, and you could argue his impact off the field in those years from the end of his playing career till the end of his life were far more significant than what he did on the field. I think that you're talking about a guy who, I had a friend of mine ask me, did I have a chance to spend time with him? And I was around him a couple times very briefly. We chatted for a few minutes, and that was kind of it. I don't claim any friendship or any ties to Mr. Aaron, and I enjoyed my brief visits with him both times. But as I tell people, he's just like the baseball card. When I got his he looked very warm. He looked very humble on the baseball card, right?
Right.
And that's the way he was in person. He was very warm, and he was humble. He seemingly always, from friends of his, always asked about them first before they could ask about him. Well, tell me about your family and how are the kids or something like that. And I think he obviously was very successful in business. He was somebody that was a mentor to a lot of people successful in this market. And he's much, much more than a baseball icon. He's the kind of guy, quite frankly, we ought to put on a stamp. I mean, he ought to have that kind of designation in our society. And, you guys are in Alabama. He's from Mobile. Yeah. What he went through in the chase in the 70s, given the turmoil with racial relations in our country at the time, is significant. And it's something that should be respected and, and really highly regarded by anybody in this country right now. And it's kind of interesting that he passes, as we're coming around through some of the things we went through in the spring and summer. And, he crossed all boundaries, all financial demographics, all racial demographics, all age demographics. I mean, my mom and dad got on a bus before I was born when they were living in Greensboro, North Carolina in 1964, and drove down here with a bunch of people on a bus to watch the Braves play in their first year of existence at Fulton County Stadium to see Hank Aaron play.
Wow.
I mean, it's just, it's just kind of who it is. I mean, I say 64. I know the Braves' first season was 66, but I know they moved to Greensboro in 64. They came down here in 66. I mean, my mom had like a 32-millimeter whatever film. They used to have the old projectors with the old Bell and Howells, and they had film of watching Hank Aaron hit a home run at Fulton County State.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what kind of impact he had on sports in this country, and in particular our part of the world for sure.
Yeah, real quick, crazy story, and telling you, Wes, and these guys in the studio here with me, I think I may have actually seen Hank Aaron hit his last ball ever out of Fulton County Stadium, and it just happened to be the 10-year anniversary of the record-breaking home run, and he did a little get-together there in Fulton County before a game and took some BP off the same pitcher that gave up the record-breaking home run. And it took him a few cuts, but he finally hit one out on the 10-year anniversary as it taking some batting practice. So I may have actually witnessed Hank Aaron hit the last his last ever ball out of Fulton County Stadium.
I'll tie one to football for you. The guy that caught 715 in the Braves bullpen is Tom House, who was a reliever on that Braves team in 1974.
Right.
Tom House now is regarded as one of the – I know he has Matt Ryan, Matthew Stafford, Jared Goff. He's worked with Derek Carr.
Wow.
As a quarterback coach and technician as it relates to throwing the ball.
Huh.
How wild is that? That's
just small world of sports
right
there.
That's a small world, isn't it?
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. And listen, we talked a little bit about this last week on the program, Wes, and being how old I am, obviously no recollection whatsoever of watching Hank Aaron play. But looking back at these numbers, I mean, you take away all the home runs, the dude still has over 3,000 hits. At age 39, he hit 40 bombs in 1 year. I mean, I heard these stories growing up, but you look at the numbers, Wes, and they're just eye-popping, the stats Hank Aaron had as a baseball player.
JJ, he hit 39 home runs at age 40, and it wasn't medically or scientifically induced 40 home runs.
Good point. Good point.
All natural.
So, I mean, the thing you watched is, and that's where, you know, they'll replay some stuff on MLB Network and things like that, I'm sure.
Right.
But when you get a chance just to watch the swing, it's like I heard Chipper Jones this week talk about his swing. And you start looking at Hank Aaron's swing and then look at a swing that was, you know, we all love Chipper's swing. I mean, Chipper just had a great swing. And you look at Aaron's swing, and Chipper said there those conversations about hitting with Henry Aaron were conversations that helped, you know, kind of refine what he was doing. And you look at the career Chipper had. And I think that, you know, Chipper was a power hitter, but he was also a guy that obviously produced a great average. And I think there's something to be said about the way Aaron played the game. He's remembered as the home run king. But, JJ, like you said, you look at the back of the card, the guy knew the value of just putting the ball in play, not necessarily hitting it out. So,
it's Wes Durham. He's the voice of the Atlanta Falcons on the Falcons Radio Network. Also, you can catch him, Packer and Durham, each and every morning on the ACC Network. What's your hoop schedule this week, Wes? Where can folks listen to you?
Saturday, a couple ball games on Saturday and Sunday of this week. And I'm working on a project for the retiring Commissioner John Swofford of the Atlantic Coast Conference in the middle of the week. So
awesome.
My basketball has been a little vacant as I'm off to do some stuff with the commissioner. But, looking forward to getting back on Saturday, Miami and Wake Forest, and then on Sunday, NC State and Syracuse. So a couple ball games. They're easy to do now. All you do is stay in your house. Guys, I mean, telling you, we get through this season with all these new ways we've done ball games. I'll look forward to, I told somebody, I never miss traffic more than I do now sitting at home doing basketball, and I don't have to worry about fighting traffic. But, man, I'd love to be in a traffic jam after a ball game right now, I tell you that.
Amen. Wes, we greatly, greatly appreciate all the time today. We'll chat again sometime soon. Thank you again for doing this, my friend.
JJ, thank you all very much. Appreciate y'all being a part of our Falcons broadcast. Take care.